I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome back, guys. DGS 405. We have Kurt Barr, Jack Coder here, two of our favorites for the think tank. I don't know if you guys were listening on the way in, but I don't know, a few minutes ago, a couple of segments ago, we did a pretty long segment about crime. And I'll give you the 2-minute version because you guys understand a lot more about it politically. And Jack, you especially, because I'm a city guy and we're in the city and you're obviously a city guy. My understanding, my intuition is that we've kind of gone off the rails. And stop me and correct me at any point where I get something wrong. My understanding is, maybe it's all my years in 97.1, but that liberals have said, well, these poor criminals, I mean, look where they come from and look at the social disadvantages and so forth. And of course, let's take it easier on them. Let's work on helping them, and let's work on the next generation so that they have choices and they don't go that direction. They make better choices and they're solid citizens. They're not criminals, as opposed to, let's police, let's investigate, let's have more cops, let's arrest more people, let's punish more people. I know that's very ham-fisted, but that's my intuition. And I was saying to the guys, like, I don't know why you can't do both. I know there's only so many dollars, there's only so many resources, but at some point when a guy is carjacking you, you're not that worried about, you know, his background. You're worried about, are you going to get shot in the face?
Right.
And if we don't stop this, it's becoming worse and worse. And we know that St. Louis is on the precipice and things are getting worse, not better. I had Mayor Jones on for the first time last week. Very pleasant, great interview. But am I near the bullseye on this one?
Yeah. I mean, I think we've taken it to an extreme. I mean, you can both hold people accountable for their actions and their conduct, especially violent crime, while also reforming criminal justice, right? And I think we've had some success. I mean, the discussion in this country and in this city about, you know, drug-related crimes and what we do with folks who are struggling with substance abuse issues has changed dramatically in the last few years. You know, we don't lock people up for drug offenses anymore. But now we've taken it to extreme where we're not arresting and holding people accountable who are sticking guns in people's faces and stealing their cars. And the citizens are getting fed up. I mean, I'm seeing it. We've had two homicides in Soulard. We haven't had two homicides in the last 5 years in Soulard. We've had two in like 2 weeks. Now they've been on the outskirts of the neighborhood. But one of them was a situation where someone was stealing a guy's car and the guy was fed up and killed somebody over it. You can't kill people over your property, even in Missouri, I guess, unless they're in your house. But that's, you know, you've got people taking the law into their own hands because they're becoming frustrated by really just sort of the lack of response from both our police in the city and namely our prosecutor. And some of the problems with the police is a result of manpower. And also they've thrown their hands up because, you know, they get tired of arresting and rearresting people and they're right back out on the street.
So if I can figure this out,
right,
and you can figure this out, who's not figuring it out? Or is it an agenda-driven thing that, oh, yeah, we see your logic, but we think something outweighs that?
I mean, that must be the case. You know, I mean, having gotten my butt kicked in an election where we talked a lot about these issues, I guess the folks in the city of St. Louis are willing to see things get worse in the short term.
And I would be mad at the people in the city of St. Louis who voted against you, except that their butts are on the line way more than mine. You know, they're way more apt to be a victim of crime than I am driving into the city.
Right.
So if that's what they want, then that's what they want.
I mean, and I guess, unfortunately, that's what everyone's going to get in the short term. I think at some point people are going to wake up and say, you know, I don't want to constantly worry about being a victim of crime when I'm going about my daily business, going to the store, going to work, going to school. But the reality is right now, I mean, there's few places in the city where you can say, yeah, you're immune from these types of this criminal conduct because it's happening everywhere. I mean, you know, you guys just ran a story about how carjackings are rampant in parts of Southwest St. Louis that have been considered very safe neighborhoods.
Yeah, Rach, that Schnucks is one that you go to sometimes, right?
Yep, in Hampton Village. I
at
mean,
6 p.m.
St. Yeah. Louis Hills, everyone's like, oh, St. Louis Hills, it's such a safe neighborhood. People say that all the time, but...
So, Kurt in St. Charles, and it's not that the city's terrible and St. Charles is perfect. Are you seeing it creep? Are you seeing more of this in St. Charles County, or do you guys have it locked up enough that it's still pretty status quo when it comes to crime?
I think we're seeing creep. You know, the law enforcement in St. Charles County, they're doing a big, you know, click it or, you know, lock your cars or you're going to get, you know, your stuff stolen out of your cars. We do see a lot of people who are arrested for criminal activity in St. Charles County tend to be from across the river. And so I don't know if we, you know, I guess we import our crime. But we are seeing, you know, people coming across the river because we're a softer target. Now, that being said, we do have a prosecutor.
Then Illinois? Or the Missouri River?
Missouri River.
Okay.
Missouri, Missouri
River.
They're coming,
I thought you were crapping on Illinois people there, and I'm like, hold on a minute.
No, they're coming over from the Missouri River and doing you know, a lot of stealing from cars and soft targets. We're seeing a little bit more in, you know, traditionally, you know, soft areas, safe areas like churches or other parking lots where you consider, well, this is a safe place. Well, yes, it is. But because, well, other people know that, they go in, they start, you know, they steal a bunch of stuff and then they flee.
Yeah.
And when they get caught, our prosecutor is good at prosecuting. And so they know, hey, it's you got to be careful with St. Louis, St. Charles County. We're not seeing the homicide rates, fortunately, that they're seeing in the city. But we are definitely seeing, you know, the crimes opportunity.
So, Jack, I know you're a lawyer and a politician, not a cop, but when I see, like, at the Foundry and Putt Shack and the Armory, all of which I've been to in the last 2 weeks, and they're amazing places. Like, we've got so much happening in St. Louis. It's so positive. Soccer stadium and all these places mm-hmm. that you can't get into without a reservation. And they're hitting these places. Again, I've never served a day in my life in uniform, but I feel like I'd go, okay, well, they're not going to hit this one again. I mean, we're going to be ready for this one. How are we not stopping it?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the problem is resources are stretched so thin. And while, yes, we've got car break-ins and issues, you know, that led to some shootings at the Foundry over the weekend, the reality is there's a lot of other crime happening and a lot of calls for service throughout the city. So you've got your rank-and-file patrol officers just humping radio call after radio call responding to things. And so they can't do that sort of proactive policing at our, you know, our entertainment venues that, frankly, we need to see and that big city, other big cities have. You know, they're going to have cops flooding the area, you know, when there's major events. And we just, frankly, don't have the manpower for that.
I know it's easy for guys like me to say, hey, we're sitting on $1 billion. It's double the police force. How ridiculous of a statement is that? Like, I know you and I have talked privately and you're like, look, man, adding police, we need to do it, but it's real expensive.
It's extremely expensive, right? And you're creating long-term liabilities. You're creating pension obligations. You can't just hire people with some of these what are now dwindling American Rescue Plan Act dollars. I mean, most of those are appropriated and accounted for or you know, budgeted for at this point. Also, even if you said we're going to double the police force tomorrow, if you had the political will to do that, I don't know. You don't have the applicants. You know, people are not as interested in doing that work. Especially in the current environment.
Who can blame them?
Right. As the job is more dangerous, you're under more stress. I mean, that has changed a lot, you know, post-Ferguson in particular. And people are not necessarily signing up to do these jobs. And so you've got to, one, figure out how to raise the pay, which is going to be really hard to do, to attract more people. I also think as a region we do ourselves a huge disservice where we basically, you know, we pit municipalities and counties against each other for police resources, right? So if we went and raised our wages tomorrow, Jefferson County is going to do the same thing. I assume St. Charles County would.
We are
municipalities
good.
Do. And you're just stealing from one another and you're not making the pool bigger. And we're kind of all having the same crime problem. So, you know, it gets back to at some point we should be looking at where are there efficiencies? Where can you start to, you know, people don't want to use the merge word, but where can you consolidate, you know, county departments, the city in St. Louis County, and make that one big, you know, metropolitan police force? The parts of Better Together's plan that I think maybe some people said, oh, this is actually a pretty good idea and there's some efficiencies here. We should be looking at doing that. I don't know that there's the political leadership right now to do that, unfortunately.
So you've been doing this a long time. If you can take yourself back mentally 5 years ago, and then we time travel you to now, is this about what you would have expected, or is it even worse than you would have expected 5 years ago?
No, it's definitely worse. And I mean, it's worse in parts. I mean, I think the situation downtown is considerably worse. I don't think that's unique to St. Louis. I think the pandemic has changed things a lot. I think if you get to some of the neighborhoods, I actually think the situation, you know, the neighborhood I live in, for example, Soulard's booming. Lafayette Square, where Rich lives, is doing really well. Some of these neighborhoods are doing great. Downtown's really struggling. And the situation at the courthouse with the prosecutor in particular has deteriorated. It's gotten considerably worse in the last 5 years. That's a huge part of the problem.
What are our options there? Politically, legally,
people have to vote her out of office. She's up again in 2024.
That's just the long and short of it.
There's no, I mean, everyone's looked at it every which way. You know, there's no legal mechanism other than indictment or disbarment to remove a prosecutor from office. Now, I know there's discussions at the legislative level, and frankly, I don't even support that. I don't like the prosecutor, but I don't think we should be. This is somebody that people voted for. Yeah. I don't think we should be weakening the power of county prosecutors just because we don't like one. I think the voters need to make that decision. I don't think it's appropriate to weaken their power. I also, you know, don't think it's appropriate for the state legislature. We fought really hard as a city to get control of our police department, and while it might have some problems and that need fixing, ultimately the city pays for it. And you know, when crime's bad and things aren't going well, it's city politicians who bear the brunt of that of that ire from the citizens, not state legislators in Jefferson City. So I think we should, you know, we got to fix these problems ourselves.
I know you don't know the answer, but your gut, if you were to hook Kim Gardner up to a polygraph, would she think, you guys are silly, I'm killing it over here, you just don't understand my system? Or would she be like, yeah, I'm failing pretty hard, but yeah.
I don't know what she'd say. I can't begin to understand what goes through her mind. And, you know, I'm an alum of that office. I worked there under the previous prosecutor. It's my first job out of law school. I think if you look, you know, across the Skinker, the city county line into St. Louis County, you can see where you can be a progressive prosecutor and still do your job and prosecute violent crime. I mean, Wesley Bell, well, he's had some issues here and there. For the most part, he's doing an okay job. He didn't lose everybody in the office. I think he's got the respect of the law enforcement and seems to be able to work with them. And you just don't see the problems we're experiencing in the city in St. Louis County.
God, I hate to say this, but because I'm a St. Louis guy since 1990, I graduated law school, went to work in the Boatman's building. I've been down here one way or another ever since. But I know that Mayor Jones went to this gathering of 300 mayors in D.C. I just feel like they'd be like, okay, we're gonna have an exercise and look at St. Louis. Here's how you don't do it. Like this and the relationship between the prosecutors and the police officers. I just feel like it's that bad. Wheels?
It seems that way. But I know that the mayor, when she was on, mentioned that other cities, other mayors, they kind of commiserated that some of them have some of the same problems. I don't know that they start the same way or that they end the same way. And I guess the question that I keep coming back to is, we feel like we're choosing one thing over another rather than saying we have two things that need to be done. Let's fix two things, right? We need to take care of the present. We also want to prevent for the future, right? You'd like to keep people in a position where crime is not, quote unquote, necessary. It's not something that is really an option because you don't have any other options. We want to make those corrections, but you also have to make sure the city doesn't die in the meantime.
Yeah, it's a difficult balance. That's a good point, Kevin. And it's something where I do think this mayor is sincere, and she is working hard and spending a lot of money on sort of trying to address some of those root causes of crime. frankly, to the point where I don't, it's not sustainable, right? We're using all these American Rescue Plan Act dollars and the COVID relief money to set up basically mini entitlement programs at the city level that we can't sustain. So yes, maybe we can give people $500 a month for a year, a select few of them, but that's not something we can do going forward, right? And so would all this money be better spent? I think it would be on kind of addressing the here and now, trying to do some more immediate crime prevention and also, you know, like fix the city that's crumbling around us as well.
Going to move on to other topics when we come back. 422 DGS Think Tank. We have Jack Coder. We have Kurt Barr. We have the city. We have St. Charles County. When I say I don't understand this, I'm not being self-deprecating. I don't understand this. I was talking to Ian Mackey yesterday, and he was talking about the state legislator who introduced a bill that would basically, like, hey, you can't teach CRT, but if you want to teach patriotism, we're going to give you $3,000. I am not sure exactly what CRT is, and I'm really not sure what patriotism is. Like, it could mean something very different to different people. Kurt, what's your understanding of this, whether it's specifically this bill or just the overarching global approach of this?
So the bill is actually sponsored by Senator Koenig, who is also the chair of the Education Committee in the Senate. And he has a bill that does two different things, but it's really the same topic. And the topic really is the culture war being fought in education. And so you see CRT, critical race theory, which can be boiled down to teaching that some races are superior or inferior to others. And that can take a lot of different forms of what is being said. But that's, in essence, what people think of when they think of CRT.
Okay, and, stop you there. You may be right.
That's not what I think of.
But the fact that they think of that doesn't mean that's necessarily true. Now, maybe true, because I started the whole thing with I don't know and I don't know. But is that what you think of when you think of that?
That's actually the language in the bill.
Okay.
The bill actually references that verbiage of, you know, teaching that one race is superior or inferior to another race. That is actually a line in the bill.
I mean, I'm okay with that. I'm okay with saying you can't teach one race is superior to the other.
Right.
But it seems like the kind of thing like, duh.
Well, but also if you teach history, I mean, that's what was historically, that's what people thought, right? They thought one race was superior to the other. So I don't know how in a classroom, if you're going to have an honest conversation and teach history, how that's not at least brought up. That there was a time when, yes, you know, in America, for example, yeah, we thought one class of people, one race of people were better than another. And so, like, we talk about critical race theory. I guess I don't really know what it is either.
So Senator King's bill actually does even go in to say that to speak about the history of race is acceptable. So he's not saying we need to have a Pollyanna look of race and say everything has always been hunky-dory and to say otherwise is wrong. What he's trying to combat is, whether it's real or perceived, the notion that in public schools there is, under critical race theory, a push to say that because of slavery and white supremacy and a number of other issues, white people are inherently bad and racist, and, you know, the oppressed minorities are inherently good because they were oppressed. And that is what is being fought against, whether it is or isn't actually occurring in schools. That is what is being fought against. And then the other half of this bill, the patriotism, is kind of the other half of the coin on this culture war of saying, okay, instead of saying don't talk about CRT, but let's talk about patriotism. Let's talk about how our country is good. So you can see the goal of not talking about CRT, because it's basically bashing America, or, you know, white America history. And focusing on, let's actually talk about the good of our history. And so what he has proposed is that the Department of Elementary and Secondary Education create a curriculum on patriotism. It's very generic as to what that means. And that when teachers go through this course, if they've completed the course, then they get a $3,000 bonus for completing this course. And that will then allow them to be able to teach positive things about our nation.
Sounds like
it sounds bad.
I'm confused, because that's nothing. That doesn't match any of the descriptions I've ever read of critical race theory, and it's really a graduate level legal study. It's not a grade school subject. It's not a high school subject. The only people that I'm aware of that have studied it have done so as graduate students at the university level. That doesn't mean that elements can't creep down, which is maybe the bigger concern, right? Not a class about that, but perhaps an influence of that. And
Senator Koenig's bill is specific, you know, kindergarten through grade 12. And so he doesn't say anything about higher education talking about critical race.
But I mean, is there any evidence that it's ever been taught?
There are, I can't off the top of my head thing. I know about stories where, you know, there's been an accusation that school districts.
Like a teacher or?
Either a teacher or a curriculum within a school is teaching critical race or an element of critical race theory.
Okay.
Yeah. Now to Kevin's point, that gets to, the other part of his bill. I read the whatever version is in or just out of committee, and I don't follow the state legislature enough to know. But there's a whole section on the Parents' Bill of Rights that actually seemed okay to me. It's a lot about transparency and having more information about students' curriculum and stats on students and how they're performing available in a centralized portal for the whole state, which seems okay to me. There's a one-stop shop on the Department of Secondary Education's website where you can find out about what's being taught in different school districts. That seemed like not a bad idea.
Do we have a patriotism shortage? Because I feel like we're all pretty good about that. Like, just generally, like, we love our national anthem. We love the Team USA. I mean, like, I feel like...
Well, right now, you know, there are people slamming their steering wheel saying, oh, you're so wrong. The NFL kneels and people won't, this and they won't that. And people are less patriotic.
But isn't that... I mean, like, again, I learned that from my dad, who was in the Army. I didn't learn that from any of my teachers growing up. I didn't learn that because I went to Catholic schools. It was not a part of anything we learned. Yet I got that because I got that at home. And I feel like that's a home thing. That's a family thing.
You guys want to hang for one more? You need to take off. All right. This is important. So we'll take it up on the other side. Also, we'll take your phone calls. 314-436-7900, 800-925-1120. 436.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
7DGS and KMOX, the think tank. We do this every Tuesday. Kurt Barr, Jack Coder, two of my favorites. One of these days I'm going to be like, one of them's my favorite. And one of them I keep telling them not to book, but they keep booking them.
Keep showing up, man.
Okay, so this is
me.
Very important. It's worth spending another segment on the critical race theory, and we're making national news because of this bill that's been introduced into the Missouri State Senate, which basically says don't teach CRT. Do teach patriotism, and we're going to reward you for teaching patriotism. And I know that I'm Mr. It's so simple, but if I were king, I would be like, look, absolutely teach the truth. And I know that intelligent minds can disagree, but I would think enough intelligent minds could get together and build a curriculum and say, hey, I know this is crazy, kids, but we once devalued black people so much that we owned them like horses and tractors. That's crazy, isn't it? And we stopped in about 1865, but it didn't end there because it was terrible and to some degree still is. And here's how and here's why. If anyone objected to that, then F off, because that's what happened. I don't think that what I just said is critical race theory that or in any way controversial. It's just what happened. And no one should make any kid feel lesser than black, white, doesn't matter. that seems so simple to me. Teach the truth. Try to keep the opinions out if you can, because I'm not sure what ex-teacher's opinion is going to be. Let's kind of agree on what we're going to teach. Then the patriotism thing, I'm with Wheels. Like, that could mean something different to every person. You know, people on the right would look at AOC and say, like, she's not a patriot. And AOC would look at people on the right and say, like, well, you're not a patriot. So that seems like a tough putt to me.
Yeah, it's very subjective. And I think it's really interesting that a conservative state senator wants to get the government so involved in, at a state level in this, when we have local elected school boards, where we have a Common Core curriculum, that we're going to, put this in state law, what can and cannot be taught, instead of leaving it up to school districts and to parents to make a choice on where they send their kids to school and what they learn in those schools. I think that's really, curious and somewhat hypocritical by the senator. And again, you get back to the subjectivity, what is patriotism, right? I mean, your AOC example is spot on, right? Like, I don't agree with everything AOC says, but I think she probably loves the country and is a patriot in some capacity. Same with some of the right-wing congressmen I don't agree with. They still, they think they're doing the right thing. I just think we're getting into really murky territory here, trying to legislate this at a state level, what can be taught in the classroom, and then putting some odd monetary incentives around teaching some things.
I'll go you one better, Jack. I'll never forget my entire life standing in my office watching January 6th with Rach and just looking at each other, shaking our heads like, what the hell's happening? And I think the people who did that are insurrectionists. The courts have said many of them committed seditious conspiracy. But I'll tell you this much. I think they probably felt like patriots.
Right.
I don't think they did it because they're like, I hate the country. I think they did it because they felt like they were modern day Boston Tea Party people, misguided. But I don't doubt for a second that that's what they felt in their brain and in their heart. Kurt?
I absolutely agree with you that they thought they were doing what was right, or certainly were, petitioning the government in a rather active way of saying, hey, we think the election was rigged and we want you to take our concerns seriously. And they found a way into the Capitol and took a bunch of selfies, and now they're being prosecuted for that.
They broke into the Capitol. Let's be clear. They didn't find their way into there. They trespassed. They broke in.
Yeah, and it wasn't just selfies. I mean,
it was different for everybody. Some of them was just selfies,
yes.
Right? There were people that were just that, and then the Oath Keepers, and those are the ones getting the seditious conspiracy ones, and they obviously had more to do with kind of pushing those things as opposed to just being in the middle of it all.
And you know what, though? This is okay. It's more than okay. It's good. It happens in individual lives. Like, I can tell you, I'm 58, Mr. Midlife Crisis, right? It happens in families, marriages, businesses, where you spend some time doing something and you go, we're off the rails. We got to figure some stuff out. I feel like that's what we're doing, and that's fine. And it's not always pretty. It's usually very messy, but we're kind of in couples therapy right now as a country.
That's a good way to put it. I thought of a question I don't know the answer to on the patriotism thing and that particular bill. Is that public schools or all schools?
So it's public schools and charter schools, which are public schools.
Okay, so it wouldn't apply to, like, say, any CBC or any of those.
No.
Okay,
so it's so any so the Department of Elementary and Secondary Education is supposed to create a curriculum for teachers to learn patriotism. If the public school teachers take that curriculum about patriotism, they'll get a $3,000 bonus. Now, it's not supposed to necessarily be a curriculum that they then teach in their classroom. Okay. It's supposed to be an opposite of what they think is CRT is doing. Is, CRT basically says America is bad because of our past racism, and now we're saying America is good because of
the teachers.
What would you think, Kurt, if they did the exact same thing in Illinois, but their idea of patriotism is going to be very different? Would you say this is overreach and you need to keep your nose out of it? Or would you say, fair enough?
Well, it depends. Are we talking about Cook County, Illinois, or the rest of Illinois?
Right, but it would be
the liberal part.
The decisions would be made by the largest number of people, right?
Yeah.
Right, so I guess the way that the political demographic is set
up.
Jack knows, as a fellow lawyer, that, hey, there's a reason, like, equal protection and the laws need to be somewhat consistent, that if every state passed a law like this, what they taught as patriotism would be vastly different, which is why maybe you don't do it.
Right. Maybe you leave it up to education professionals to develop curriculums, not state senators.
Or like Will said, your family.
Certain things, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Religion. I would think patriotism is not religion, but I mean, it's a personal thing, right? Like it just, it's not, and it's... I mean, I happen to be really into that kind of thing. Like, you know, I've always been into history. I've always been into Team USA sports and things like that. So, I mean, it's a thing for me. But I did learn it not from anything in school. I never had a teacher mention any of that to me. The closest thing would have been in the Pledge of Allegiance at the beginning of the day when I was still in public school. I don't remember if we did it in Catholic school, but I don't think we did.
I hope we don't screw this generation up. You know, well, here's what it's like. I just use the analogy of we're in couples therapy, but our kids are listening. That's never good. And it's kind of what we're doing. You know, we're working all this out. We're like, you know who we're going to do this with are these third graders.
Or are we the kids that got messed up?
Well, I mean, I guess this gets back to the broader issue with this is this a, you know, solution in search of a problem? If we're not actually teaching critical race theory in the public schools in the state of Missouri, which I don't think we are at, you know, K through 12 level, what do we need this for? You know, maybe we just need the first half of the bill, which deals with transparency and teaching and, you know, a parent's bill of rights as to what documents they can have access to and everything else. I think we can all live with that. And maybe that's where this whole thing's headed. Or maybe this was just a big ploy to distract us from the legislators' dress code that they were fighting about last
week. Yeah, we only got like a minute left. What do you think of that?
I mean, it's ridiculous.
Is it silliness? Is it?
Yes. I mean, the fact that, again, Missouri made the national news its first week back as a state legislature because, you know, talking about a dress code for women, which is just crazy.
Going to leave it there. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it. 451 DGS. Matt Pauly joins us from the sports department. So 5 p.m.
We find out. Yes. Right? Scott Rowland, yes or no? There was a subreddit. I'm not a Reddit guy, so I'm probably using the wrong terminology here. But there was a thread on Reddit, I guess, basically showing the Hall of Fame getting ready for something. Hmm. So the indication is that there is likely
somebody's getting in.
Yeah.
How many people are up?
Well, a lot of them, but it seems like only two really have a chance based on the voting totals.
Roland and Todd Helton. I hope both of them get in. They're both Hall of Famers.
Yeah.
I think you have music playing from your phone, Dave.
Oops, sorry.
Yeah, it'll be fascinating because one person's already going in. He was chosen by the Eras Committee, so there will be somebody. Fred McGriff was chosen, so they will have a player to induct. But to me, it's always weird when there's nobody on the current ballot that gets
in. Let's say that all three of them get in. Is that a light year?
No, that would be actually a pretty good year.
Now it would be. I mean, go back 15 years ago, it'd be a light year. But now it would be because you've got all these voters who have these self-righteous beliefs that they, you know, the empty ballots or the one individual because they're trying to push some sort of narrative. Yeah. There's a lot going on. I think there's an issue with the people who are voting and losing sight on the fact that they have control on one of the greatest moments for a human being's life, and they're screwing with it for their own stupid reasons.
How many people are we talking?
Hundreds.
Voters or?
Voters.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Hundreds and hundreds. And it's getting better, I think, because it's an interesting dynamic because the younger voters tend to be less judgmental about those things. Maybe they're going to have their own flaws. There's some of the younger ones might be too analytically inclined and not enough listening to the narrative of what a player meant and how much of a big deal they were in their time and how influential they were. But it is going in the direction away from kind of the personal pettiness. That's always been around, though.
Yeah.
There have always been stories of guys that didn't get a lot of votes because they weren't popular with the people that covered them.
I'll tell you, though, the old school guys who don't do that are the true, like, beat writers who have been around the game for a long time. Like,
you
know, Derek Gould's not that old, but he's somebody who's been around baseball a long time, and I really respect his ballot. I worked in Milwaukee before. There was a guy there by the name of Tom Huddercourt who covered baseball forever. I saw his ballot. He's got a ton of guys. So the true beat writers, the guys who have covered the individuals, men or women who have covered baseball on an everyday basis throughout their career, they don't tend to pull this petty stuff.
So we have about a minute left. Make the case for Scott Rowland.
He is one of the seven or eight greatest third basemen in the history of the sport. So out of all the people,
I think you could stop talking now.
Yeah, out of all, think of it this way.
Paulie's right.
Out of all of the people that have ever lived on the planet Earth, only six or seven have ever done that job better than Scott Rowland. You're a Hall of Famer.
So what's the possible? Why could anyone vote against him?
Because some people get caught up in old school counting numbers, and the old school counting numbers aren't as favorable, like total hits, total home runs, things along those lines. And also, I think, Matt, you probably agree, defense doesn't get enough credit when it comes to the Hall of Fame. It's especially often the Hall of the good hitters.
Yeah.
And, I mean, Rollins, you know, he was a great hitter, but he was also maybe the second or third greatest defensive third baseman of all time.
Especially at third base. For some reason, a lot of voters really devalue defense at third base, and I don't understand it at all.
Which is stupid because it's also one of the two or three most premium defensive positions.
Yeah.
Like, the only two that are more important are catcher and shortstop.
That's really fascinating.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Odyssey is giving you a chance to win a trip to London to see Taylor Swift at the Eras Tour. It's Tay in the UK.
Hey, it's Taylor.
Just download the free Odyssey app, log in and listen to a participating station for a minimum of 60 minutes to get your daily entry. And you could win a chance to fly off to London with three friends and see Taylor.
I can't wait to see you at the Eras Tour in London.
For more, go to odyssey.com/Taylor.
Tay in the UK.
It's on the Odyssey app.
Thanks to Republic Records.
This is a national contest.